Welcome to the third episode in the Blue Heron podcast series, a talk given by Douglas Kirk before a concert performed by Blue Heron, the Boston Shawm and Sackbut Ensemble, and the Blue Heron Violin Band on April 26, 2008. The concert, entitled Music from the Age of El Greco and Velázquez, presented a musical complement to the exhibition El Greco to Velázquez at the Boston Museum of Fine Arts. The visual artworks shown at the MFA and the musical works performed in the concert were connected by more than the fact of being created in the same time and place. Both art and music enjoyed the patronage of one man, the Duke of Lerma, chief minister to Philip III of Spain around the turn of the 16th century. In his talk, Dr. Kirk, a musicologist and cornet player from Montreal, who conceived the program and performed in the concert, speaks about the Duke of Lerma's position at the Spanish court, the lives of some of the composers, and the instruments participating in the performance. All the music you will hear was recorded live at the concert at First Church in Cambridge. Blue Heron is a vocal ensemble from the Boston area specializing in music from the 15th and 16th centuries. It is directed by Scott Metcalf. Blue Heron was joined on this occasion by the Boston Shawm and Sackbut Ensemble, the Blue Heron Violin Band, and a continuo group of harp and organ. For more information about Blue Heron and the Blue Heron podcast series, visit us on the web at www.blueheronchoir.org. And now, here is Dr. Douglas Kirk.
When Philip, the prince and son of Philip II, King of Spain, ascended to the throne upon his father's death and became Philip III, this was in 1598, the Duke of Lerma, not yet then a duke, in fact, had been for some years Philip's close protege at the palace, sort of ingratiating himself to Philip, actually in hopes of restoring the lost glory of his family, the Sandovals, who had fallen from power because of political disputes about a generation earlier, two generations earlier. The problem, though, was that when Philip became king, suddenly there were a whole lot of other people who wanted to become the close intimate of Philip and his chief advisor. So the Duke of Lerma had his work cut out for him to engineer his continuing closeness to the king. Now, if you wanted to become the chief advisor, the intimate, who controlled all the access to the king, this meant that you basically had to be in the presence of the king pretty much all the time. There were three palace officers whose positions allowed them that degree of access to the king in Renaissance Spain or France or England, for that matter. One of them was the sommelier de corps, which was the sort of chief valet for the king. He was the one who in fact slept in the same chamber as the king, so much for decorum and privacy. This didn't really exist in Renaissance and early times. And he controlled the appointments for the king. He helped him dress, disrobe at the end of the day, and supervised the meals that the king ate. That was one possibility. And palace etiquette made sure that the sommelier de corps never left the presence of the king. Another officer was the groom of the stole. This fellow basically was responsible for the king's most intimate details. He helped him with his toilet. He was responsible for, shall we say, wiping the king's posterior, and so on. And that also was an officer that really never left the king's presence except when he had to carry out the chamber pot. This role probably didn't really appeal to the Duke of Lerma. The third possibility was the caballerizo mayor, who was the sort of the chief knight of the realm. He was in charge of the stables. Now, the stables in Spain and in France was not what we think of today. This was the administrative official who basically controlled all the postings of palace servants, controlled the postings of the ministriles, the instrumentalists, the choir, controlled the appointments to head officials who were in charge of councils and all this kind of thing. This is, in fact, what the Duke of Lerma ended up engineering for himself. Now, the concert tonight is a celebration, in a way, to go along with this exhibition. And I've written some extensive notes, which you can read at your leisure, but that explore the whole idea of the Duke's patronage in the musical arts. The exhibition explores his patronage in the visual arts. So I won't talk about that now here. Instead, I think I'll say just a few words about the composers of these works that we're going to play for you and sing for you tonight, and then perhaps talk just a minute about the instruments, since some of them may be a little less familiar to you. One could almost say that this concert is a celebration of music of Francisco Guerrero and associates who studied with him or worked with him or knew him in the later 16th century. Francisco Guerrero was the chapel master in Seville Cathedral, the biggest church in Christendom at the time, and also one of the, probably the most, aside from Toledo, the seat of the cardinal primate of Spain, the most influential and important archdiocese in the country. During this period, of course, Spain was also in charge of an empire that spanned the Atlantic Ocean since the discovery of the New World. And on a regular basis, ships would leave Seville loaded with supplies for the cities, the developing cities of the New World in Mexico and in Peru and elsewhere, Bolivia, and return with gold and silver from the New World, which would be unloaded in Seville and then dispersed elsewhere. Francisco Guerrero was, as chapel master, was responsible for all the music that was copied in the scriptorium at Seville Cathedral, and thus he controlled a lot of who, what composers' works were sent around in Spain and also into the churches of the New World. He was a musical prodigy himself, possessed of a very fine tenor voice. He played several instruments: flute, cornetto, harp, vihuela, organ. And at the very precocious age of 17, became the chapel master in Jaén. And from there on, his career was unfolded in a remarkable way. He traveled in Spain and Portugal. He made one trip to the Holy Land when he was about 60 years old. On his return, on the return voyage, his ship was attacked by pirates on two different occasions. He was held prisoner, held for ransom, his life threatened. He managed to get away with that, but they stole all his money, and so when he returned to Spain, he was thrown into debtor's prison because he had no way of even paying for his return in Spain to Seville. Finally, Seville Cathedral ransomed him from debtor's prison, and he came back and resumed his career there as chapel master. He ended up dying of the plague at the end of the 1590s, just as he was planning a return trip to the Holy Land. Oh, and he also wrote a book about his trip to the Holy Land, the first trip that he made, which was, in fact, quite clearly known to Cervantes and had a role in Cervantes' plotting of Don Quixote. Another composer that we'll do in this very first set is Juan Navarro. He studied with the eminent composer Cristobal de Morales and then with Guerrero in Seville. He became chapel master at Avila and then moved to Salamanca and Palencia. In Palencia particularly, he was very greatly esteemed by his cathedral chapter, and after he died in the 1580s, the cathedral chapter went to the almost unheard of, usually when a chapel master died, that was it. They just sort of set about looking for somebody new and went on from there. In Palencia, though, the cathedral chapter published posthumously a volume of his works. So they were preserved for posterity then. A very important composer in Spain, and not well known today, is Sebastián de Vivanco. And we have featured him fairly prominently in this program because I think Vivanco is one of the greatest composers that Renaissance Spain produced. He grew up in Avila, where he was a fellow choir boy with the young Tomás Luis de Victoria, who's about 3 years older than Vivanco. He became chapel master at Lérida and then Segovia. He went to Seville to become the assistant to Guerrero, but the chapter in Avila went into a bidding war with Seville to try and retain his services as chapel master, and ultimately he went to Avila where he stayed for a while. And then finally, in the last couple decades of his life, he spent as chapel master in Salamanca, the ancient university town at the cathedral there. The thing about Vivanco that's so remarkable is that not only was he chapel master in Salamanca, but he was the one person in history that Salamanca University allowed to hold the chaired position of music simultaneously with being chapel master. A great indication of the skill that he had and the appreciation for that skill that his contemporaries paid him. At the end of the second set, we'll do a remarkable piece by Pedro Ruimonte. Ruimonte came from Zaragoza in the north. He became a singer and then ultimately chapel master in Brussels at the archducal court of Alberto and Isabella in the Spanish Netherlands. He stayed there for for about 10 years, and the Duke of Lerma patronized some of his publications and music. Then he ultimately returned to Saragossa, where he lived the last decade or so of his life, and taught and composed. He had a particularly emotional style, as you'll hear in this piece, Sancta Maria Succore Miseris, and I think is really a splendid composer. Lastly, we have Alonso Lobo, another associate of Francisco Guerrero in Seville. Lobo had been born in Osuna to the east of Seville, graduated with a university degree there, became a priest, worked though with Guerrero, and ultimately became chapel master at Toledo Cathedral. An incredibly important post, the seat of the Cardinal Primate of Spain, as I mentioned, and then spent the last decade of his life returning to Seville and serving as chapel master there.
Thank you.
Now, in this program, we will do instrumental works that come from a manuscript that is still in Lerma, and another instrumental manuscript that was in Lerma until the 1950s and was ultimately sold to Utrecht University. These are some of the only ministriale manuscripts, that is, instrumental manuscripts copied by the instrumentalists themselves and used by them when they played occasional music or even music in the service. They also, though, would play with the choirs, and so we'll do a fair amount of that, doubling the choirs or playing parts other than the parts that are sung. The Duke of Lerma, one of his ways in which he served as a patron of music was that in 1605, for the birthday celebrations of the future Philip IV, he imported a consort of violins from Italy. And these people stayed at the royal court in Madrid for several generations, well, for several decades, and they and then their descendants became and remained the royal violin consort. Before this time, the stringed instruments that were used in Spain were the violas de gamba, the six-string instruments played upright and bowed underhand like that. The violin family then, we know when it came to Spain and that the Duke of Lerma was instrumental in bringing it there. The wind instruments that we'll play are the typical wind instruments of the time, the cornet, the sackbut, the ancestor of the trombone, the dulcian, which is the ancestor of the bassoon, and also the shalm, which the Spanish called chirimia, which was a particular favorite of the Spanish. They used it a lot. In fact, they tended to call the instrumental ensembles by just the name of that instrument, Las Chirimias. And they would because the shalm is a loud instrument and could sort of deputize for the trumpet, which was not used in churches at the time. It was used for entrance and exit music. We'll also use it, as it was on rare occasions, to double voices on particularly high ceremonial occasions.
You've been listening to podcast number 3 in the Blue Heron podcast series, featuring music of Guerrero, Vivanco, Lobo, and others, performed by Blue Heron, the Boston Shawm and Sackbut Ensemble, and the Blue Heron Violin Band, and introduced by Douglas Kirk. The talk and the concert were recorded live by Philip H. Davis at First Church in Cambridge Congregational in Cambridge, Massachusetts, on April 26, 2008. The pre-concert lecture was supported by a grant from the Cambridge Society for Early Music. Directed by Scott Metcalf, Blue Heron is a vocal ensemble from Boston, specializing in Renaissance polyphony. For more information about Blue Heron and the Blue Heron podcast series, visit us on the web at www.blueheronchoir.org. There you can find the complete program for the concert featured in this podcast, including program notes and translations, as well as audio and video links, more podcasts, an archive of past programs, essays on the performance of Renaissance vocal music, biographies of the performers, information about upcoming events, and more. This podcast is a Tenor Technologies production.